and his orchestra bring you mellow and relaxing tunes. But don't get too relaxed, because the Four Lads are back again as Messrs. Music. And Bert Parks, your bandstand MC, keeps you smiling between numbers. It's a great show live all this week on NBC Bandstand.
And now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blastoff. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, a story by Frederick Pohl, Tunnel Under the World.
On the morning of June 15, Guy Burkhart woke up screaming. It was more real than any dream he'd ever had in his life. He could still hear and feel that sharp metal-ripping explosion, that searing wave of heat. He sat up.
Mary! 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 Mary, where are you?
Guy, what's wrong? You're trembling.
Where were you?
In the kitchen cooking breakfast. What is it?
Oh, a dream, I guess. An explosion.
Did you say an explosion?
Yes.
But that's the dream I had.
What?
I dreamed there was a big explosion and then something sort of hit me on the head.
Holy smokes. Maybe there really was some sort of explosion, and it started the streaming.
Well, there'll be an explosion down at your office if you don't hurry and get to work.
Coming in on the bus, Burkhart watched to see if there was any evidence of an explosion. There wasn't. If anything, the town looked better than ever. The only thing that seemed strange to him was the fact that none of the usual crowd was on the bus. He was a little relieved when he did see his old pal, Henry Swanson.
Excuse me.
Henry.
You pardon me, sir, please.
Henry, what's the matter with you? It's me, Guy Burkhart.
Burkhart? Sorry, I don't believe we've met.
What? Henry, for Pete's sake, it's me.
If you'll excuse me, this is my stop.
Well, I'll be... How do you like that?
Guy Burkhart got off in front of the gigantic Contro Chemical building and took the elevator to the 98th floor, where he had worked in the accounting department for 12 years. It wasn't until he was almost at his floor that he realized the speaker wasn't playing the usual commercials.
Are you happy with your present home freezer? Of course not. Well, the answer to your problem is a Feckle freezer. Feckle freezers are better freezers. Most wives would do anything for a Feckle freezer. Are you happy with your present home freezer? Of course not.
Good morning, Miss Orton.
Good morning, Mr. Burkhart.
A new hairdo, I see.
Oh, yes. Do you like it?
It makes a lot of difference in your appearance. Is Mr. Barth in?
Why, no, sir. Had an appointment with Mr. Dorchin at the advertising agency.
Today? But today's the 15th of June. He has to sign the quarterly statement.
He said he wouldn't be in.
That's mighty peculiar.
Yes, sir.
Oh, by the way, Miss Horn, what the devil is a Feckle freezer?
A Feckle freezer?
There's some new copy on the elevator commercial. Dorchin must have landed another account. Feckle freezers.
I really don't know, Mr. Burkhart.
It's a funny day. Can't quite put my finger on it. There's something strange going on.
He couldn't shake the thought out of his mind. It persisted all through the day and through dinner. He was still brooding as he and Mary got ready for bed.
I guess I'll get a good night's sleep. Coming?
I think I'll sit up and read for a while.
All right, dear. Good night.
Good night, dear.
At exactly midnight, Guy Burkhart lapsed into a sudden, deep sleep. And the following morning, he woke up screaming.
Darling, what is it? What's wrong?
Nothing. A bad dream, I guess.
Oh, you gave me such a shock.
I seem to be having a lot of nightmares lately.
Really?
Yes. The one I had yesterday. This was the same. A big explosion and then nothing.
You had a dream yesterday?
Of course I did. You had the same sort of dream.
I? Oh, Guy, you're mistaken. I don't remember dreaming.
Mary, you told me.
Guy, you're mistaken.
But, Mary...
Maybe you dreamed I had a dream. Maybe you...
Yes. I might have done that, I suppose. Everything did seem sort of strange yesterday.
That's probably it. You'd better get dressed, dear. Today's the 15th, and that's when the quarterly statement...
The 15th?
Yes.
Well, then, there must have been a dream. Because yesterday was the 15th.
Guy Burkhart got up, dressed, ate breakfast, and took the usual bus to work. Once again, everything seemed even brighter and newer than usual. Once again, he was puzzled when he noticed none of the old crowd on the bus.
Pardon me, please.
Look, don't shout so. Oh, Henry, good morning.
Morning.
Don't you recognize your neighbors?
I don't believe we've met.
Henry, it's me, Guy Burkhart. What's going on?
I'm sure I don't know, sir. For God's sake, don't talk to me.
What is it? Are you being followed or something?
Don't you know? I was sure you remembered.
Remembered what?
I can't talk. This is my stop, sir. Will you please excuse me?
Henry! Henry, for Pete's sake!
As in yesterday's dream, Guy Burkhart got off at his stop and took the elevator to the 98th floor. The speaker in the elevator purred a new commercial this time.
Marlin cigarettes. They're sanitized. Does your present cigarette make your throat feel raspy and unpleasant? Marlin cigarettes contain a miraculous new drug which actually gives you the sensation of smooth, creamy smoke. Marlin cigarettes. Marlin cigarettes. Marlin cigarettes.
He walked down the marble corridor to his office.
Good morning, Mr. Burkhart.
Good morning, Miss Horn.
You like my new hairdo?
Why, yes. Is Mr. Barth in?
No, sir. He had an
appointment with Mr. Dorchin at the agency. I know.
You know?
I guessed it anyway. And today's the 15th of June, and he won't be here to sign the quarterly statement. And I'm going nuts. Let me have a cigarette, will you?
Yes, sir. Try one of these. They're Marlin.
I never heard of Marlins before today. What are we? A bunch of guinea pigs for Dorchin's new advertising accounts?
Is something wrong, Mr. Burker?
Wrong? Perish the thought, Miss Horn. Perish the thought. Hello?
This is Swanson. Henry Swanson.
What is it?
Do you remember?
Remember what?
Just remember.
Listen, Henry, let's stop playing games. Yesterday, either I was dreaming or you snubbed me on the bus. Today, the same thing happens.
You do remember, thank heavens. I thought so when I saw you, but I couldn't be sure.
What is it you want?
Listen, tomorrow morning, when I get off the bus, you get off with me. But be casual. They may be watching.
Who may be watching? Swanson. Hello?
You bought this burger?
Yes. I'm still out of cigarettes. Would you buy me a pack of Kelvins?
Wouldn't you rather have Marlins?
I smoke Kelvin's.
But, Mr. Burkhart, Marlins have that soft, creamy smoke that's so soothing to your throat.
You really believe that stuff?
It's true. I wouldn't say this, Mr. Burkhart, except that, well, I've gotten to know you pretty well, and I've grown to admire you so much.
I see.
Would you mind, Mr. Burkhart, if I told you that for months now I've wanted to, well, just comfort you. I know how troubled you've been.
You've never mentioned your feelings, Miss Horne.
April. My first name is April.
That's a pretty name.
You see, I do have your welfare at heart. That's why when I see you smoking Kelvins, and I know Marlins are so much better, won't you let me buy some of them for you?
I suppose so. Why not? Here, you bring me a carton.
Thank you, Mr. Burkhart. Guy. I'll be back.
There was something wrong. Something definitely peculiar about what was happening. A call from Henry Swanson. The strange behavior of this secretary, Miss Horne. These new products. The dream. Guy Burkhart went home that night feeling like a man in a nightmare.
That you, dear?
Yes, me.
Have a good day.
Fair.
Oh, before you sit down, would you go down the cellar and put in a new fuse? The switch in the hall closet blew out and I shut it off.
Okay.
Supper will be ready in a minute, so don't start fooling around with that old boat hull you've been building.
I won't. Mary! Mary!
What is it?
Come down here. Hurry up!
What is it?
I'm not sure. I was looking for a fuse, and I thought maybe I'd drop one under the boat hull, so I scratched around. Look. Let me put the flashlight on it.
Well?
Look at the floor.
What about the floor?
It's supposed to be cement.
Well?
It's copper. There's a thin layer of cement, but underneath it's metal. Look here. Underneath the concrete, more metal. There. And here, on the wall, metal. Metal under the floor, behind the walls, every place.
Well, I don't really understand.
Mary, I know this sounds crazy, but somebody, for reasons I can't begin to guess, has taken this house and replaced it with a clever imitation.
God.
I know it sounds insane, but take a look. That bracing on the beams, that isn't the bracing that was always there.
Oh, you're imagining.
I am not imagining. Mary, I'm going to look around for a little more.
Well, your dinner will be ready.
Save it for me. There are a couple of things I have to figure out.
The following morning, Guy Burkhart woke up screaming. He dragged himself into the kitchen where his wife Mary was preparing breakfast and discovered it was still June 15th.
Mary, listen.
Guy, what is it? You're trembling.
Mary, the dream.
Dream?
About the explosion. The same one we've been having.
We? I didn't dream about any explosion.
You did. Why are you covering up?
Covering up? Guy, what's happened to you?
It happened.
What?
Where's the morning paper? Where is it?
Outside the door, I guess.
June 15th.
Well, you'd better hurry. Today's the day Mr. Barth fills out the quarterly tax return.
No, it isn't.
What?
He won't be there. He'll be at a meeting with the head of the advertising agency.
Mr. Dorchin?
He'll be there. And Miss Horne will have a new hairdo. The elevator will be selling some new product. And Swanson.
What about Swanson?
Swanson. He's... I wonder if it's going to be the same today or whether...
Guy, what in the world are you talking about?
Nothing. Where's my coat?
You haven't had breakfast.
I don't want to miss my bus. I'll see you tonight.
Guy Burkhart got on his bus. There were the same unfamiliar faces, the same unusually new-looking buildings, the same unusually bright sunshine. And Henry Swanson, pale and furtive.
Oh, excuse me, sir.
You're quite all right.
Do you remember the phone call?
Yes.
Oh, thank heaven. Get off at the next corner and follow me.
Where are you going?
There's an excavation for a building about a block down. But make sure you aren't followed. I'll go first. Burkhart. Burkhart, here behind the fence.
Now, Henry, what's this all about?
Just a minute. I want to make sure you weren't followed.
Followed by whom?
By them, of course.
And just who are they?
I'm not sure. At first, I thought perhaps they were Russians. Now I'm beginning to think they're Martians. No humans could have accomplished what they've accomplished.
Look, start from the beginning, Henry. What's going on?
Burkhart, peculiar things have been happening to you, right?
Yes.
A lot of your friends are missing. Your house seems changed.
Yeah, there's something stranger than that. The date. Today is June 15th. Yet I could swear that yesterday was June 15th and the day before that.
Yes, you've got it. It's always June 15th. And you and I are the only ones who know it.
But why? How?
I'm not sure. I think it's some sort of mass hypnosis or something.
Why didn't it work for us? My wife Mary doesn't remember things.
Somehow, when it happened, they missed us. We were protected from the full force of the rays or whatever they use. Burkhart, where were you on the night of the 14th, about midnight?
That was Sunday night.
Yes.
I was down in the cellar, under that boat I'm building.
And I was in my dark room developing some pictures.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. Russians, Martians. What makes you think so?
I've seen them.
Where?
At the end of the tunnel.
What tunnel?
The one that they built under Tylertown.
A tunnel under Tylertown?
Yes, that's right. It's made out of copper or some alloy.
Wait a minute. I found a copper layer under my cellar floor last night.
Yes, so did I. That's how I discovered it. I found a way to get in, too. It's at the bottom of this excavation.
Holy mackerel. Why don't we tell the police?
Because we can't trust them. Even the police may be Martians in disguise.
You're being melodramatic.
Am I? You just come with me.
Where?
Into the tunnel. I'll show you.
Henry Swanson led Guy Burkhart to a small hole in the side of the excavation. There he removed a cut-out piece of metallic substance, and they crawled into a dimly lighted tunnel. They walked for what seemed like 2 miles, until Swanson held his finger to his lips.
We've got to be quiet now.
Henry, this is fantastic. We've got a tunnel right under the whole town.
Oh, Burkhart, you haven't seen anything yet. There's a room a little further down. We'll be able to look through a glass in the door.
Is it safe?
It's perfectly safe, unless one of them comes along. Now, come on. Look through this glass. Now, just so I know I'm not completely insane, tell me what you see.
Good Lord.
Well?
A tremendous panel with dozens of telescreens. And in front of each, a servo robot. They seem to be computing something.
Yes. I've watched them. They're evaluating data from the screens.
Evaluating?
Why not? Each of them has a part of a human mind, remember that?
It's against the law to transfer an evaluating circuit from a human brain to a robot.
Burkhart, whoever is conducting this monstrous experiment is operating far outside the law.
Have you gotten a chance to look at the data on those screens?
No. No, I've been afraid to go in. There might be a warning circuit somewhere.
If we knew what those robots were working on, we'd go to the authorities.
I'll risk it if you will.
It's worth a chance. We're lost anyway.
Okay. Open the door. So far, so good.
Come on. Let's take a look at that data.
Yes, but don't interfere with the robots.
Don't worry. Let's look at the screen. Whew. Listen to this. Tests
in the 47K12 group with Marlin cigarettes pulled 80% using the soft feminine approach. Indications are that an extension of this approach would sell at least 70% nationwide. On the feckle freezers, the direct elevator pitch pulled only 10%. This should be abandoned and a new series of high persuasion elements introduced. Henry, do you know what this means?
I haven't the faintest idea.
I don't blame you. It's crazy, but it fits the facts when I think about it. Do you know who's behind this?
Martians.
Not Martians, Henry. Advertising men.
What?
I don't know who they are or how they've done it, but somehow they've taken Tylertown over. They've got you and me and 30,000 others right under their thumbs.
Hypnosis.
Hypnosis drugs. Maybe some kind of ray or something. However they do it, what happens is that they let us live through a single day. During that day, they pour all kinds of suggestions and propaganda into us. At the end of the day, they evaluate the results, see how we've reacted. Then at midnight, they wash the day out of our minds. And the next morning, we start the same day over again with different stimuli.
No, I can't believe
it. I know it sounds ridiculous, but think of it. They can run the perfect test, and on a whole community. Do you know what that means? Suppose one man learned how to influence people 100%. In a year, he could sell us anything from freezers to political candidates.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
We're guinea pigs, Henry. This whole community is one big test tube for propaganda research.
What do we do?
Somehow, we get out of this town and get to the FBI.
Do you think we can?
Yeah, it's worth a try. Come on.
Wait.
What is it?
Look. Look. There's somebody coming down the tunnel.
We've got to hide.
Quick, behind the circuit box.
Shh. Good Lord. It's Dorchin, the head of the agency that does our advertising.
Quiet.
All right, Burkhardt, come out. We know you're in this room. Miss Horn has informed us that you remember. I must warn you, it's useless to buck us. Come out peacefully and let our maintenance crew adjust you properly so you don't remember from one experiment to the next. It'll be quite painless. If you don't come out peacefully, we'll have to get you.
Henry, take this wrench. When I give the word, jump him.
He may be armed.
We've nothing to lose.
Very well. I'm coming after you.
Now!
Burkhardt, I've killed him.
Wait, I'll get his coat unbuttoned. Maybe his heart is still beating. Henry.
What is it? What's wrong?
Look underneath his coat.
Oh, heaven help us.
It's a robot. A humanoid robot. Designed to look like Dorchin.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Wait.
What's that?
A loudspeaker.
I told you it was useless, gentlemen.
Who are you?
Mr. Dorchin, naturally. The real Mr. Dorchin.
What are you trying to do to us?
Merely trying to prevent you from damaging my experiment, gentlemen.
You can't get away with this, Dorchin. Sooner or later, somebody, the FBI or somebody, is going to get wind of this madness.
Oh, now really, Burkhardt, you're quite naive. Now why don't you be reasonable and let the maintenance crew adjust you?
If I refuse, I suppose you'll kill me.
That would be quite impossible.
Oh?
You see, Burkhardt, you're already dead.
Dead?
You're shocked. It's quite true. You and everyone else in this town were killed by premature atomic blast at the Control Chemical Plant. The blast occurred at 7 a.m. on June 15th. That's the last thing imprinted on your minds. That's why you wake up screaming each morning.
It isn't true.
Oh, but it is. What I and my associates did was take the brain circuits from your dead body. We stored them in electrochemical batteries until we had a chance to rebuild the cities and begin our tests.
Do you think I believe a fantastic tale like that?
I imagine you'll find it incredible. Of course, we didn't rebuild everything exactly. After all, it only has to last for a single day. June 15th. At midnight, we turn off the power and wash out the memory of the day. You and your friend Swanson, unfortunately, have defective circuits. You'll remember.
Burkhardt, it's no use. We're trapped. Please give up.
Not me.
But what can we do?
We can make a run for it down the tunnel. Come on.
It's useless, Burkhardt.
Keep going.
It's useless. Useless. Useless.
Burkhardt, it's no use. You go ahead. I'm finished.
Look, we're almost the end of the tunnel. I can see a door. Here, I'll help you.
I can.
Just a little further.
No.
Now, here. This door is open. It opens. Oh, no. I don't believe it.
I can't run anymore.
Come on.
Swanson. You go ahead. I'm finished.
Look, we're almost the end of the tunnel. I can see a door. I'll help you.
I can.
Just a little further.
The ledge way into a chasm so deep they could not see the bottom.
The star is open.
Beyond was only a glare so bright that their eyes could not stand to look into it. And yet, just beyond the limit of their vision, something towered. Something so huge it was almost inconceivable. Something...
Burkhardt!
Yes?
This is Dorchin. Now, do you understand why it's useless?
The great looming figure moved closer. It seemed to take shape now, and yet it was so gigantic as to be unbelievable. It came closer. The glare was partially blocked, and then Guy Burkhardt knew that the towering shape was none other than Dorchin himself.
You see how I did it, Burkhardt? I took your brain circuits and had them reduced so they could be transferred to tiny humanoid mannequins. That's what you are, Burkhardt. A tiny miniature of yourself. And this city, this whole experiment I'm conducting, is built on a tabletop.
It was the morning of June 15th, and Guy Burkhardt woke up screaming.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Man of Distinction by Michael Schara. Being completely unique in this world is not only a mathematical impossibility, it is also a matter of pride. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Tunnel Under the World, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Frederick Pohl and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Norman Rose, Dean Almquist, Amy Siddell, Elaine Rost, Bob Hastings, Ken Rapief, and Larry Haynes. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Scott Buckley and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Music of Russ Morgan live on Bandstand weekday mornings on NBC Radio.
Are you interested in human rights and social justice? Come check out Amnesty International UBC. We fight to stop human rights violations all over the world, including here in Canada. Our club hosts letter-writing sessions, social events, documentary nights, bar fundraisers, and current events discussions on a bi-weekly basis. So keep your ears open and check out our Amnesty International UBC Facebook page for more information. We look forward to promoting human rights with you.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro, and I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pit my power against your brains any day. What was that?
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room. If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
It's about time. The UBC hockey season opener. Tune in this week as your defending Canada West women's hockey champions take on the Saskatchewan Huskies. Listen live on CITR 101.9 FM this Friday at 7 p.m. or online at CITR.ca.
Lights out, everybody.
Arch Obler bringing you another in our series of stories of the unusual. And once again, we caution you, these lights out stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now.
I know it's time I am, Father Donahue. And old as I am, I'm not ready to die until you. Come closer, Father, and hear my miserable confession. You know me as a good woman of the village. Yet I've heard what you say. There's no finer old woman in all the islands than the widow than Nell. But that's not so, Father Donahue. And if I'm to meet all my old friends in the island of paradise, then hear me out and pray for me. You know my sons, Thomas and Paddy, born on the same cold winter's night they were. And the firstborn, Thomas, was as good as an angel in paradise. But the second, the one I named Paddy, was evil from the moment he took his first breath of God's good air. It was Thomas that carried the load of the family on his back, fishing from early to late. But Paddy, the rake, drinking and brawling and running from work as if the devil himself was pulling him away. I pray to the good God every night that some goodness come into the man's heart. But with every year, he grew worse. Even what his crooked tongue couldn't talk away from honest men. But his brother Thomas, he repaid me for all the trouble. A good boy. And when he came to me with the words that he was to marry Eileen, the heart in me sang for the good God always meant for the two of them to be together. How I remember the day of the wedding. The sun shining, and the sky and the sea smooth as a baby's cheek. I was so happy. Little known of the horror of what was to come. Oh, it was a happy morning.
Listen to the mother. Did you ever hear a happier sound in all creation?
Why, shouldn't they be happy, Thomas? It's not every day that such a blessed marriage comes in the island. The prettiest girl in all the blast is waiting to be your bride as soon as the sun starts setting.
My bride. Mother, that's a grand word.
I'm happy for you, my son.
I wonder where Paddy can be.
Paddy?
Yes, he isn't around. You know where he is.
Oh, that's right. It'll be a better wedding without him.
Oh, no, Mother, don't say things like that. After all, he's your son and my brother.
I've got a sorrow in my heart. He's drinking and brawling.
Paddy, you did come.
Speak of the devil.
And why shouldn't I be here? Is it only strangers that are welcome at your wedding?
Oh, no, Paddy, that's not the way to talk. There's food and drink and...
No, wait a minute. I've got more important things to do than to be filling your belly. Listen to me, Brother Thomas.
Is your head that full of weddings that it can't hear the chance of making a star richer than a Yankee?
What do you mean?
Yes, speak up, Paddy. What devilment are you up to now?
Devilment nothing. It's honest money I'm talking about. And may the next pipes and tobacco be at me on wake if I'm not telling you the truth.
I'm listening, Paddy. Let's hear what you have to say.
You remember the hulk of a ship that was wrecked off in Eastern Abroad a bit ago?
Well?
But I went there yesterday to see if there was anything worth having. Oh, listen to me, brother. In the bottom of a pool no deeper than this room is lying enough bolts of copper and brass to make you and me the richest men on the island.
What?
Ah, you can believe your ears. Wouldn't you rather bring the bride a pocketbook filled with gold sovereigns than the empty leather you've got now?
But, Paddy,
I wish you, Mother. You talk to the men.
But if it's in the sea, it'll wait until after the wedding.
Oh, wait, will it? And with those Inish boats sailing out around the place? I tell you, it's now or never. And may my sword to the devil if I'm not saying true words.
Thomas, it would be nice to have a bit of money in the house.
Yes, sir. Then what are you waiting for? You've got the boat big enough to handle the stuff, and I'll be there to help you. And in 3 hours, you can be back here dancing.
Oh, it's Eileen. Let her have the word whether you stay or go.
Stay or go where, Mother Donnell? What's going on, Thomas?
Well, you see, Eileen...
Ah, you're the day short. Let me say it. Eileen, there's a fortune in brass and copper boats waiting for us in water no deeper than a man's neck over off Inishna Brawl. And Tommy here thinks you'd be fool enough to say no to his going.
But must he go now?
The sea doesn't wait.
He'd be back in 3 hours, Eileen.
I just think, Eileen, you'd have a dress for every day of the week.
Do you want to go?
We could build a new house with the money.
Mother Donnell, do you think Thomas should go now? I mean, with all them out there?
Well, we're so poor, and Thomas, young as he is, so worn and weary from work. Maybe this is God's blessing, a gift from heaven for putting our faith in him who watches over all of us.
God's blessing is right. £100, and we'll be kings of the island. Come on now, we can take the side path down the cliff.
Wait, brother. Eileen, is it your wish?
I'd be a poor wife to you, Thomas, if I stood in your way of making a living before our marriage.
My darling.
Ah, there'll be time enough for that now when we get back. Come on, Thomas, let's get out of here.
Hurry back to me, my dearest.
The sea will take me to our good fortune, and the sea will bring me back.
Out this way, Thomas. Come on, hurry up.
Yeah, I'm coming.
Until the wedding, darling.
God go with you.
Thomas!
Yes, yes. I'll be back in 3 hours, Mother. As rich as a Yankee. Bye.
Oh, Eileen. Oh, little baby, why should you cry? Thomas is proud to see so many times. Why should you cry this time?
Oh, Mother Donnell, I'm frightened.
Frightened? And tell me, why should you be frightened?
I don't know, but when that door closed behind him, it seemed as if the waters of the sea were closing over. Oh, Mother Donnell, hold me close. I'm so afraid. Oh.
And soon, Father Donahue, Eileen and I left the dancing and the fiddling behind and climbed the long path up to the top of the cliff so our eyes could see far out over the water. And all the time, Eileen kept crying that she'd never see Thomas again. That she'd never see Thomas again.
Oh, Thomas.
Oh, stop crying.
Things
you're saying, girl. It's tempting the devil to do his evil work. Oh, I haven't climbed a big path for a minute. It's a little too steep for me old bones.
Thomas, where are you?
Oh, now stop that, girl. Aunt Thomas has found so much copper and brass, it's taken him longer than he thought.
Thomas wouldn't come back, lady, would
he? Oh, well, Paddy would if there was a shilling extra to be made, and he talked Thomas into it with that sharp sign of his. Ah, the last ship. And now we'll see them. They're both weighed down with good fortune. Eileen! Eileen, stay away from the edge. You'll go over the cliff.
Oh, Mother Donnell, to the west.
Huh?
To the west where they went. The water.
Oh, Mother, that wind, where did it come from?
Out of the west where he was.
But in all my years, such a wind has never been before.
Oh, look at it swirling and tossing before the wind. It's dead.
No.
My darling, dead.
No. Dead. Stop saying that. It's not dead, my Thomas.
Eileen, come back to you. Come back to me.
Oh, that was a time, Father Donahue. The wind grew wilder and wilder. In a minute, the sea was pounding at the base of the cliff. And the girl shrieking she wanted to die with Thomas. And me frightening her back from the edge and praying to the good God to give me old arms the strength to hold her back until she came to her senses. None of us got a wink of sleep till the light of morning. Oh, that wind. I can hear it now. Snarling and talking.
Peter Donnell, The boat. Your son to the west.
Why, my son.
Aye, come on.
Dead?
No, the boat's coming and there's living hands on the oars. Come on.
Oh, there's a scatter, my knees. I can't see to their mercy.
Mother Janelle, I heard someone say.
Oh.
Mother
Denell. Arlene, the merciful God has brought them back.
Oh!
Come on, quick. They're trying to get into land. Hurry now.
Oh, Mother Denell, quickly.
No. No, wait, child. Your shawl. Your shawl's there. Now give me your arm. Oh, my old red chamois. Oh, I can hardly walk.
Yes. Lean on me.
Oh.
Hurry. Mother
Denell. Yes. Yes, I'm moving fast as I can. It's hard against this wind.
Let him live.
You bless it. For the life of one. Then I bless it. For the life of two. Good neighbors, let us through. My son.
Let's put it in there now.
Let us through. Oh, I can see nothing. The waves and the dark. I mean, do you see? Oh, yes, Mother Denell. I see them. I see them.
Where? Point it out to me, girl. Where?
Oh, over there. Follow my finger.
Mary, they're coming back.
Yes, I see the boat. Oh, blessed boat. I see it. Praise God. I see it. One. There's only one.
No.
Now, what are you saying? Thomas. Teddy. Mother Kate, come back. The waves.
The bird's right. There's only one in the boat.
Waves. They're both in.
Thomas.
Oh, no. No, Eileen, wait for me. My son, take me to him.
Oh, yes. Forgive me.
Come. I'll help you. Oh, good girl. Which one? I know it, Thomas. Yes, Thomas, the good Thomas,
he lives. Stand aside, everybody. Let the widow and the girl through now. Let them through.
Let me go. My son, which one?
Well, I'm back, Mother. Will you please see me?
Teddy.
Oh. Please, stand back now.
You, Teddy.
Yes, me. Ain't I got a right to live?
Tell me quick, where is my son? Where's Thomas? Tell me, Teddy, where is my Thomas?
Where do you think he is, old woman? Dead at the bottom of the sea.
Aye, Father Donahue. That was what he told me. My good Thomas was dead at the bottom of the sea. Dead. The good Thomas dead and Paddy the evil one alive. Oh, it wasn't right, Father. And in the days and nights that followed, I cried to God, why did you do it? Why? Why did the sea take my dear Thomas from the boat and leave Paddy? Was there no reward on earth for goodness and sweetness of soul? And in the seventh night of my sorrow, there came an answer. I was lying on my bed. Outside, the sea was singing and whispering. My window was open and I could hear the sea talking as I lay there crying. Crying from a long time. I did.
Do not cry, Mother. Mother.
I heard a voice.
You heard me, Mother.
Thomas's voice. Oh, no. No, it's some wildness in my weary head.
Mother, I am so weary. You must listen.
Oh, dear Scott. Why do you do this to me? My son is dead. Dead in the sea. Why do you bring me the memory of his voice?
Mother, believe me.
If I could only see you, I would believe.
Oh, no. The horror the sea made of me. Wind and wave and grinding rock against my flesh.
Oh, I wouldn't care, my son. Just let me see that it is you and not my own voice speaking in the head.
Oh, Mother, you don't know what you ask. But if there is no other way, close your eyes until I give you a word to open them.
I've closed them.
Now open, Mother. And have no fear. I beg you.
Oh.
This was Thomas.
Oh, no.
Mother, why did he murder me?
Murder?
The sea was calm. We reached the pool where he set the copper and the brass ladle. I stripped off my clothes and dove under.
Oh.
And when I tried to come up for another breath of air, oh, Mother, he wouldn't let me do it.
Oh, no.
With his hand, he held me under. My hands, they tore at his arm. But he held me down. Down until at last I screamed for mercy. And the water filled my mouth. My lungs and killed me. My own brother killed me. And that is why I tore myself out of the sea. I want to know why he did it to me. Why? I cannot rest in peace until I know and understand. You tell me. Oh, speak, Mother. What gain could come to him for such a horror?
I do not know. Oh, believe me, my son. I do not know.
Then I must go back. I cannot stand this pain.
Oh, my good Thomas.
Look at this. What was Thomas Daniel's face, Mother? Look at it and give me your oath you will not tell my Eileen or my brother of this night.
Oh, but I...
Your oath, Mother. They must not know. You hear me? They must not know.
I swear, Thomas.
Oh, merciful one, this pain. I go, Mother.
Where?
Back to the sea.
Oh, and will we ever meet again, my son?
Yes. The day I find out why he made me drown, I will return, Mother. I will return.
Thomas, my son, come back. Oh, my son. My son.
But he was gone, Father Donahue. Gone back to his nameless grave in the sea. Then it happened. Frederick talked his way into the good graces of the girl. Simple little Eileen. What did she know of the evil of men? A devil Paddy and my good Thomas's Eileen. Took their life out of me. And made me long for the quiet of my grave. And then came the day of the wedding. Again the fiddler was playing. Again the good people of the islands were happy. I alone was sad, weeping at what I knew.
Oh, Mother Donnell, why do you sit here apart from all the rest and weep?
I'm not weeping, girl. For weeks you've been so sad. Can't you find a little joy in your heart for this day of my marriage to your own son? My son. Well, I do not love him as I did dear Thomas. May he rest in peace. But Thomas himself told Paddy that if he died, he wished that Paddy had care for me. And Mother Donnell, what is it? Your face so strange.
Now he knows. I just remembered. Now he knows.
Who knows? What are you saying?
There you are, my little bride-to-be. Why waste your wedding day with this old woman? Mother of mine, though she be, her face is sour enough to curdle milk. Come on away now.
No, wait, Paddy. Mother Donnell, you must tell me. What is it that makes you stare at Paddy with such an awful look?
That's the look she's always had. Look how the sun glints on the sea. It's a day for a king. And I'm a king marrying the girl I've always wanted. Come, kiss me, Eileen. Kiss me so that all shall see me kissing the prettiest bride in all Ireland.
No, please.
Kiss me. Let the sky and the sea...
Mother Donnell!
What did you make that sound for, old woman?
What's going on around here?
Nobody!
Scream!
Who takes it? Now then, speak up, Mother. Why did you shriek like that?
The sea.
What of the sea? What are you pointing your bony finger at out there? What are you...
Look! At the water's edge!
Say, what is something's coming out of the sea? Look!
Something's coming out of the sea, right?
I see it now. Oh. It's a seal, that's what it is. A seal. Where's the club?
It's not a seal! Huh? It's a man!
Look, man! Bones! Just bones! Let's get out of here!
Eileen, do not look. Do not look. Oh, blessed Mary, she's fainted. She will not see.
What? What is it? I can't move. I cannot move.
No. You cannot move, my brother. You cannot move.
That voice.
Bones and little flesh. And yet you know the voice.
Thomas.
Thomas, your brother Thomas. Come back again.
No.
Because now he knows.
No.
Now he knows.
No. Knows what?
Why you murdered me. Your flesh and blood. I heard it from your own lips. You wanted my Eileen always. That's why you did it. Your clever tongue can no longer save your brother of mine. I have come a painful way to get you.
No. No. No, you won't get me, dead thing. No. I'll get away. I'll run. I'll run.
And so he ran, Father Donahue. He turned and ran up, up the path that led to the top of the cliff. And behind him, slowly sobbing with the pain that tore at his dead bones, climbed my dead Thomas after him. And after Thomas, dragging my old bones, I went. Oh, for they were my sons. And I had to see that right was done. Up, up, up until at last Terry stood on the very edge. The sea 500 feet below. Shrieking, yelling, and wailing. He stood there shrieking at that horrible thing. What once was his planet?
No, no, nothing. Stay back, stay back. You bones of filth, stay back.
I back. Come for no. you, my brother.
No, no.
I come no. for you.
No. He fell. He fell. Mother, see, he didn't get me. Those rotten bones gave way beneath him. He didn't get me, Mother. Mother, what are you going to do? Mother. Mother!
Over the cliff, Paddy went, turning and twisting, and into the sea where the water covered him over. When the others of the village came up there at last, I told them that the old bones of Thomas had done it, had clutched Paddy close to him and thrust him over. Oh, Father Donahue, listen. It was I that gave that final push that sent the evil son of mine to his death. Thomas tried and failed before he had his last measure of revenge. So I did it, Father. I gave Paddy the new life. And I gave him death. Is there any forgiveness in heaven for what I did?
Traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving shower head to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electropop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle
basic. Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns.
On CITR 101.9 FM. Every Monday morning.
From 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense, and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow across it, and we're making it black and young. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making
it. You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Go to a party with me?
No, the game's on.
Oh, I almost forgot. I'll be right there.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl.
Do you like sports and don't care who knows? Then CITR Sports needs you. If you like sports, are into radio, or generally just want to have a great time, then come join us. Email our sports coordinator at sports101@citr.ca to find out more, or come by the station in the new sub. See you soon.
Watch, because I'm the man.
And you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and that's about all the time that we have for Scalds Hall. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. And so from all of us here in Vancouver, please enjoy your weekend and have fun.